This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines this hour. Hundreds of Palestinians are killed in fresh Israeli strikes on Gaza, one day after the International Court of Justice ordered Israel to take steps to prevent acts of genocide. Iran says the ruling by the International Court of Justice on the Israeli war in Gaza is a bitter proof of international crimes, including genocide committed in Gaza. In the U.S. and the U.K., airstrikes target a Yemeni port, while Sana'a remains resolute in prohibiting Israeli-linked ships from accessing the Red Sea. This is news. Thanks for joining us. There's no end in sight to the Israeli genocide in Gaza, as the regime's warplanes and artillery keep pounding the strip, with the focal point of attacks now being the southern parts of the besieged territory. According to Gaza's health ministry, at least 183 people have been killed and hundreds more injured in Israeli strikes in the past 24 hours. 28 people lost their lives in the southern city of Khan Yunis alone. Israel is also pushing ahead with its indiscriminate strikes on the critical infrastructure, including healthcare facilities, schools, refugee camps, and even UN-run shelters. Doctors Without Borders say that Gaza no longer has a functioning healthcare system. Several hospitals in Khan Yunis remain under Israeli siege, despite warnings that many patients are at high risk of losing lives. A doctor at Nasser Hospital describes the catastrophic situation there.
We have a major shortage of medical staff. We have less than 10% of hospital staff that are working throughout the war. The majority of injured people coming to the hospital are those displaced in schools and residential areas. Medical equipment in the hospitals is almost non-existent, of course. The simplest things in the hospital, such as painkillers and anesthesia tools, are not available. We are trying our best to deal with patients that arrive, and we are trying to keep them alive. We are not trying to treat them as we were doing before. We are just trying to keep them alive.
Several international aid agencies, including the UN, have time and again highlighted the humanitarian crisis in Gaza amid relentless Israeli bombing and shelling. The regime has, however, defied calls for a ceasefire, with several UN resolutions vetoed by Israel's key backer, the U.S. Since the start of the Israeli onslaught in early October, nearly 26,300 Palestinians have been killed, majority of them women and children. Meanwhile, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says that it has ambushed Israeli forces in central Gaza, killing and injuring several of them. The regime has so far confirmed 220 fatalities among its troops on the ground in Gaza. Well, earlier we spoke to our correspondent in the Gaza Strip, Moti Abu Musaba, about the latest developments there. He says the Israeli regime has intensified its attacks on Khan Yunis, targeting areas near hospitals, as well as people who are waiting for aid.
The Israeli warplanes once again targeted the Palestinian civilians who were gathering near Al-Kuwait roundabout, waiting for the humanitarian relief. The Israeli occupation, as the last time, attacked them once again and killed at least three Palestinian civilians, in addition to dozens of the Palestinian injuries. On the other hand, Khan Yunis city, till this moment, is under heavy bombardment and continuous airstrikes, particularly the western parts of Khan Yunis city, the surrounding areas of Al Amal Hospital and the surrounding areas of Nasser Medical Complex. It was reported that at least a Palestinian civilians from the Palestinian evacuees taking shelter inside Al Amal Hospital was killed after the Israeli occupation forces shot at the hospital. And on the other hand, the Palestinian resistance is still fighting back. It was reported that Al-Qassam brigades and Saraya al-Quds have repeatedly targeted the Israeli tanks in those areas, in those battle zones. And in the meantime, the Palestinian resistance as well continued targeting the surrounding areas of the surrounding occupied territories in Gaza's envelope with different and multiple barrages of the missiles launched from Gaza cities. When it comes to the weather conditions, as for these moments, as we speak right now, the weather conditions are still catastrophic for the Palestinian people, knowing that the vast majority of the people in Gaza are living inside small tents, which are which cannot be taken shelter by the people in order to endure this kind of unprecedented situation.
Palestinians have slammed Israeli threats against the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, calling on the world to confront the regime's attempt to dismantle the organization that provides life-saving support to millions of refugees. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas called on the UN and international organizations not to cave into threats and blackmail from Israel. The Palestinian Liberation Organization said the decision by several countries to cease support for the UN Relief Agency for Palestinians entails great political and relief risks. It called on countries that announced the cessation of their support for UNRWA to immediately reverse their decision. The Palestinian Authority said the UN agency needs maximum support and not cuts. This after Israel claimed several UNRWA staff were involved in Hamas's October 7th operation. The U.S., Italy, and several other countries have now stopped funding for the organization. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says it has targeted a secret Israeli military headquarters in Sheba Farms near Lebanon's southern border. The group says it attacked the base using Falak 1 missile. The International Court of Justice has ordered Israel to prevent genocidal acts committed inside Gaza, but stopped short of ordering a ceasefire. In a move that has frustrated pro-Palestinian activists, only six of the special measures requested by South Africa were granted by the ICJ, including increased humanitarian aid to be allowed into the devastated Palestinian territory, where over 26,000 have already been killed in the U.S.-Israeli genocide.
It was a ruling weeks in the making. Lawyers acting for South Africa had requested the International Court of Justice implement special measures that would prevent more deaths and a further humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. This whilst the main case of genocide is considered against Tel Aviv, a process which could take years.
In the court's view, the aforementioned facts and circumstances are sufficient to conclude that at least some of the rights claimed by South Africa and for which it is seeking protection are plausible. This is the case with respect to the right of Palestinians in Gaza to be protected from acts of genocide and related prohibited acts identified in Article 3, and the right of South Africa to seek Israel's compliance with the latter's obligations under the convention.
Free Palestine! Outside the court, pro-Palestinian activists had a mixed response.
It is a bittersweet feeling that I'm having now. It's as if finally there is international recognition that the Palestinian people are facing the threat of genocide, that they are facing vicious war crimes. It's as if we have to be grateful that they're finally recognizing it, right? And to hear also the evidence that the judge stated, it was very painful to hear all this evidence there. But still, the people on the ground right now, I don't think it will benefit them at all on the short term. So it's also very painful to realize that.
The whole world knows it. They are exposed. That means that the people, the normal people who are not affected by the politics, will know the truth, will know that there is a genocide there. Israel cannot hide it anymore. They are exposed. And now the most important thing is that every complicit party has to know that they will be the next. Israel may escape with it, but the other complicit parties will not.
That gave me hope, and that reminded me that this is a long struggle. And even though a ceasefire has not been ordered, which is a bitter pill for us to swallow, but this is still a victory. This is the first time that Israel has been officially, quite clearly reprimanded. And as Muin Rabbani, the Palestinian analyst, said, this is a stain on them forever.
Of Foreign Affairs on 6 December 2023.
The muted response to the ICJ's interim ruling shows that it wasn't just occupation Israel that was in the dock in the building behind me, but actually it was institutions like the ICJ, like the UN's top court, because people want to know that they can have justice that is tied to what's going on and not simply to Western political interests.
The European Union has said it respects the decision of the court and expects all parties to comply. Meanwhile, Israeli ministers have taken to social media to call out both the ICJ for attempting to lecture Tel Aviv and again calling the South African case anti-Semitic. South Africa, who brought the action against Israel to the ICJ, acknowledged the six measures granted would be difficult to implement without a ceasefire.
This case was very much about international bodies ensuring that they exercise their responsibility to protect us all as global citizens.
From the river to the sea!
Israel has 1 month to make its initial report to the ICJ to show compliance of the special measures requested. Palestinians have indicated they will not hold their breaths. Amina Taylor, The Hague.
Reactions are pouring in on an interim ruling delivered by the International Court of Justice on the Gaza genocide case against the Israeli regime. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman says that the ICJ ruling is late, but it is a bitter proof of international crimes, including genocide committed in Gaza. Nasser Kanani, in a social media post, said that Israel's angry reaction to the ruling also showed that the regime is founded on violence and discrimination and does not respect international law and regulations. Earlier, the European Union called the ICJ's ruling binding, saying that Israel must comply with them. Scotland's prime minister said the court's order is clear and urged Israel to stop killings in Gaza. Spain also welcomed the interim measures at the top UN court and demanded its implementation. The Turkish president described the order as valuable, calling for an end to the Israeli bloodshed in Gaza. The U.S. military says it has destroyed an anti-ship missile in Yemen that was ready to launch into the Red Sea. U.S. Central Command claimed that the missile presented an imminent threat to the U.S. Navy in the region. That came after the Yemeni army struck a British oil tanker in an operation in the Gulf of Aden. The ship falsely claimed that it was heading for Greece, but the Yemeni army said that it was actually bound for Israel. The vessel was being escorted by American and British warships, which retreated under relentless attacks by the Yemeni armed forces. The Yemeni army has targeted over 24 Israeli-operated or Israeli-bound vessels in the Red Sea over the past several weeks in response to the regime's genocide in Gaza. They've also been targeting American and British ships in retaliation for the U.S.-UK aggression against Yemen. Earlier we spoke to Hossein Al-Bukhaiti, a Yemeni activist and political commentator in Sana'a. He told us that the U.S.-UK aggression against the country has failed to stop the Yemeni army from targeting Israeli-bound vessels in the Red Sea.
At this point, it's only UK and United States who is actually are involved directly in military attack against Yemen. And they should all understand that all the shipping line in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden and in the Arab Sea, all the ships are actually sitting ducks for Yemeni armed force. That's why any country that will interfere or join the United States, I'm sure that their ships will come under attack. And it's really, really funny when the United States has formed with the UK this so-called Prosperity Guardian, we call it actually in Yemen is the genocide guardian. They formed that coalition to protect Israeli ship, and now they are unable actually to protect their own ship. For Yemenis, the Palestinian blood is more important than those cargo ship and those container ship or those oil tanker that belonging to those country who's actually directly supporting the Zionist state of Israel and their killing against the Palestinian people. Now Yemen is forming a blockade against Israel and as well against United States and against UK, and they are willing to expand its attack against any country that will actually try to intervene military in this so-called Prosperity Guardian. And I advise all the country that is part of this Prosperity Guardian and they haven't actually taken any military action to withdraw from this coalition, because this coalition is actually to protect the killing of the Palestinian people in Gaza.
Iran has denounced as interventionist a statement by three European countries on the Islamic Republic's recent launch of an indigenously built research satellite into orbit. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said achieving scientific and research progress, including in the aerospace field, is the legitimate right of Iran. He said such interventionist statement toward Iran will not affect the Iranian nation's determination for continuous progress in science and technology. He was reacting to a statement issued by France, Germany, and the UK after Iran successfully launched the satellite dubbed Soraya into orbit at 750 kilometers above the Earth's surface. While rejecting the trio's anti-Iran rhetoric over the satellite launch, Kanani underlined that there are no restrictions on the country's space research and its scientific endeavors. Iraq and the U.S. have held the first round of talks on the future of American and other foreign troops in the country. The Office of Prime Minister Mohammad Shia al-Sudani said the Iraqi premier presided over the meeting focused on ending the mission of international coalition. Earlier this week, the two countries agreed to start talks on the future of the U.S.-led military alliance in Iraq with the aim of setting a timetable for a phased withdrawal of troops. The U.S. has had a continuous presence in Iraq since its 2003 invasion. U.S. combat forces left in 2011, but thousands of troops returned in 2014 under the pretext of fighting Daesh. The latest round of talks comes at a time of heightened tensions. Iraqi resistance groups have been targeting U.S. forces almost on a daily basis since October, after Israel launched its genocidal war in Gaza. That does it for this edition of World News. Thank you so much for being with us. Goodbye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Photographs and videos published recently by the Zionist regime's head of antiquities authority show that the Israeli regime has stolen artifacts from Gaza that were later displayed in the Israeli parliament, the Knesset. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Middle East Eye has covered this story and tells us more. On 21st of January, Eli Esposito, the director of the Zionist regime's Antiquities Authority, published a series of posts on his Instagram account saying that his deputy went to Gaza to inspect antiquities, which are now being displayed in the Israeli parliament, the Knesset. One of his captions accompanying a photograph of looted items says, "A small showcase was placed in the Knesset." In another video, he explains in a caption that the Israeli military contacted the authority to examine a warehouse full of antiques in Gaza. The video shows a warehouse filled with vases, some on shelves and some on the floor, while soldiers roam around the warehouse. Some of the artifacts are damaged, with visible cracks on them. According to Israeli media, in one of the videos, an Israeli soldier is heard calling another and saying, "Did you see the bracelets? Come see the bracelets." Some of the photographs posted show Israeli regime soldiers holding tablets with engravings on them. The director of the Zionist regime's Antiquities Authority, Eli Ascozido, later took down the post and issued a statement in Hebrew, recently saying that the items were only examined and left undisturbed at the site. The Israel Antiquities Authority was called by the Israeli army to inspect a warehouse in Gaza containing ancient items, or those that seemed to be ancient. A preliminary examination was conducted by an archaeologist, and a written report will be submitted to the Israeli army later on, the post on his Instagram account read. The items were left in their place. To avoid any doubt, the Antiquities Authority asked the Israeli army to keep the archaeological artifacts in their place. The post was slammed by a pro-Palestine activist, Khaled Yusri, who denounced the director and called the move a war crime. In an Instagram post, Yusri said, "The theft of antiquities is considered a war crime according to international law. The illicit trade of cultural properties, including antiquities, is a crime under the 1970 UNESCO Convention under measures to be taken to prevent the import, export and transfer of ownership of cultural property." According to a report in the Israeli media, at the start of the war, an archaeology staff officer in the civil administration of Judea and Samaria published a document called Assaulting and Guarding, in which Israeli army soldiers who called to report to the archaeology subcommittee any finds they come across in the fighting in Gaza. Earlier this month, the Gaza government media office said the Israeli regime's army has, since 7th of October, looted money, gold and artifacts worth around $25 million. The Gaza government media office said it had dozens of testimonies provided by residents of the Gaza Strip regarding the thefts. Theft operations occurred in various ways, the first of which was at a checkpoint, such as Salah ad-Din Street, where they stole from the displaced people who had moved from northern Gaza Strip to the south, their bags containing their valuable possessions such as money, gold and artifacts, the office said in a statement. Additionally, Israeli soldiers have also looted the homes of Palestinians after they were forced to flee their homes. Some of the looting was documented by Israeli soldiers. The Zionist regime has come under scrutiny as video footage has emerged of troops carrying out violent and provocative acts that appear to have little to do with furthering their stated objective of destroying the Palestinian movement Hamas. Videos shared online showed theft, destruction of businesses and properties, vandalism, and the installation of Israeli and Jewish symbols across Gaza's neighborhoods. In one video, an Israeli soldier bragged about stealing a silver necklace from Gaza to take back to his friend in Israel. Another soldier stole a rug from a Palestinian home. In other posts, an Israeli officer stole makeup to take as a gift to Israel. While a Palestinian musician told Middle East Eye he was shocked to discover that an Israeli regime soldier had stolen and played his guitar on the rubble of his destroyed home in northern Gaza Strip. At least 195 heritage sites in Gaza, including an ancient harbour and Christian monasteries, have been destroyed or damaged since the start of the war on Gaza on 7th of October. Among the other sites destroyed include Gaza's main public library and the historic Hammam al-Samara, the public baths of the Samaritans. The latter was believed to be the only active hammam, also known as a public bathhouse, remaining in the Gaza Strip. It is located in the Zaytun neighborhood of the besieged enclave. The hammam, or public bathhouse, boasted Ottoman architecture and had several rooms, each with a different temperature. It was managed by Haj Salim Abdullah al-Wazir, and the building was over 1,000 years old. Two museums, the Rafah Museum and the Al-Qarara Museum in Gaza, have also been levelled, according to International Council of Museums in Arab countries. The former had a collection of ancient coins, copper plates and jewellery, while the latter opened in 2016 and had a collection of 3,000 artefacts dating back to the Canaanites. Around 1,000 of the 1,200 mosques have also been partially damaged or destroyed in Gaza, including the Othman Ben Kashgar Mosque in Gaza City's Zaytun neighborhood, which was built in 1220 at the site where Prophet Muhammad's great-grandfather is believed to have been buried.
Ocean of Dua.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll adopt a thematic approach towards supplication, and we'll have a look at supplication from the point of view of different verses of the Holy Quran. And we'll also have a look at some parts of the transmitted supplications as well as the whispered prayers. So stay with us. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil fa. Brothers and sisters, in the previous episodes, we were discussing the reality of the status of the supplicants. We have counted up to six stages for the status of the supplicants. In the first stage, the supplicant is only looking for his own request and nothing else. Of course, he has resorted to the Almighty Allah, and this is what really needs to be grateful for. In the second stage, the supplicant is looking for the contentment of the Almighty Allah. In the third stage, the supplicant is aware of the fact that the Almighty Allah is totally aware of his state, so he knows that the Almighty Allah suffices him. In the fourth stage, which is the stage of the infallible imams of the prophets, the supplicant has no want or desire because he knows the secrets of the creation. In the fifth stage, the supplicant asks God only because of his faith. We had a look at some of the words of Lady Fatima and also other infallible imams. Now, the sixth stage is the position of an individual whose request, I invoke you to let me get to you, has been accepted. So, you see, in the previous stage, we described the words of the infallibles, that they asked the Almighty Allah to be among the best ones. وَجَعَلِّي مِن صَفْوَتِكَ. O Allah, make me among your choice. مِنْكَ أَطْلُبُ الْوُصُولَ إِلَيْكَ. guide me to you, let me get to you. Anta ghayatu matlubi wa munaya, you are the end of my hopes and wishes. So these requests of the fifth stage, they are all totally accepted, and now the supplicant, the individual, is in the sixth stage. So his request is accepted and has reached such a servant, has reached such a state in which nobody thinks to ask for such a position. In order to understand this more, in order to elaborate on that, we can refer to the words of Ziyara Jami'a. So in this Ziyara, we read, فَبَلَغَ اللَّهُ بِكُمْ أَشْرَفَ مَحَلِّ الْمُكَرَّمِينَ وَأَعْلَى مَنَازِلِ الْمُقَرَّبِينَ. Allah has granted you the most honored positions, the highest rank of the closest ones to you. وَأَرْفَعَ دَرَجَاتِ الْمُرْسَلِينَ, the highest positions of the prophets. حَيْثُ لَا يَلْحَقُهُ لَاحِقٌ وَلَا يَفُوقُهُ فَاهِقٌ, the kind of station that no one reaches, no one exceeds, no one proceeds or ever thinks to get. وَلَا يَطْمَعُ فِي إِدْرَاكِهِ طَامِعٌ حَتَّى لَا يَبْقَى مَلَكٌ مُقَرَّبٌ, there is no angel. وَلَا نَبِيٌّ مُرْسَلٌ, there is no prophet. وَلَا صِدِّيقٌ وَلَا شَهِيدٌ, there is no truthful one, no martyr. وَلَا عَالِمٌ وَلَا جَاهِلٌ, there is no learned or unlearned man. إِلَّا عَرَّفَهُمْ جَلَالَةَ أَمْرِكُمْ, unless Allah has made them know your loftiness. And this is special to the infallible imams.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, Har khujo mushkil javab onjo ravad. Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Har khujo keshti. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Ab kamju tishnagi avar bedas. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. Ta beju shad avaz balava asr. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the mercy of God will come towards you.
It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
Dear listeners, there is one point to be noticed regarding these different stages of supplication. The delicate point to be observed regarding the supplications of the infallible imams is the fact that they have left for the believers an ocean of knowledge from which each individual takes benefit according to his own capability. So these beloved ones have instructed us to take our wants and desires, either small or big, from our God. It is not to be asked why do the infallibles ask the Almighty Allah, because they are always aware of the secrets of this world and the other. No, it is actually having a look at this great ocean of knowledge, we understand that they have transmitted their knowledge to us, their lifestyles to us, even history to us through these supplications. The secret behind this issue is that these honorable ones have established a kind of school which instructs everybody. These scholars have opened up the doors of prosperity to everybody. So, in supplication, a special aptitude is not required. The educational school of supplication is different from other kinds of schools that everybody can take in it freely and everybody can benefit from it in accordance with his specific taste. No. In other words, the inclusive nature of knowledge of the Ahlul Bayt, this kind of knowledge of the infallible Imams, makes their knowledge so pervasive that everybody can enjoy it anywhere in the world, and it is not specific for a location. It is in accordance with this expression, يَمَنْ دَنَا فِي عُلُوِّهِ يَمَنْ عَلَى فِي دُنُوِّهِ. O you who are near, though you are so high, and you are high even in your nearness. And this delicate issue can be found only in the school of supplication and not in other educational schools. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode as well. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
To you throughout my life, Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the United States, the Supreme Court has allowed federal agents to remove razor wire along the state of Texas's border with Mexico. In a 5-4 vote, the Supreme Court justices sided with the Biden administration in the dispute with the state of Texas. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster ABC News has covered this story and tells us more. A narrowly divided Supreme Court on Monday, 22nd of January, sided with the Biden administration in a tense ongoing dispute over the Texas-Mexico border and razor wire fencing installed by the state of Texas that had prohibited federal agents from performing their duties. The court, by a vote of 5-4, cleared the way for federal agents to remove the razor wire, which Biden administration officials and immigration advocates had called dangerous and inhumane. The Department of Homeland Security has also argued that the state's activities interfered with clear federal supremacy in setting border enforcement policy. The Supreme Court's order did not elaborate on the decision. It means federal border agents can resume full control of the contested border area while litigation continues. Supreme Court Justices Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch, and Brett Kavanaugh said they would have denied the administration's request to lift a lower court injunction that was blocking removal of the razor wire. Texas officials responded to the decision, including Governor Greg Abbott, who wrote, "This is not over," as he vowed to keep preventing the Biden administration from destroying the state's property. "This is not over. Texas's razor wire is an effective deterrent to the illegal crossings that the Biden administration encourages. I will continue to defend Texas's constitutional authority to secure the border and prevent the Biden administration from destroying our property," Governor Greg Abbott wrote on X, formerly known as Twitter. Lieutenant Chris Olivares, the spokesperson for the Texas Department of Public Safety, one of the agencies tasked with executing Governor Greg Abbott's Operation Lone Star, accused the federal government of impeding Texas from protecting its borders and said the state would maintain its current posture by using barriers and wire along the Rio Grande. The state of Texas, under Governor Greg Abbott, Operation Lone Star, will maintain its current posture in deterring illegal border crossings by utilizing effective border security measures, reinforced concertina wire, and anti-climb barriers along the Rio Grande River, Olivares said in a statement on X. The razor wire fencing was installed along the Rio Grande River by Texas authorities as part of Operation Lone Star, an effort launched by Republican Governor Greg Abbott in 2021 to curb illegal immigration into Texas. The state sued the Biden administration in October of 2023 over what they called the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol's practice of cutting, destroying, or otherwise damaging Texas's concertina wire that had been strategically positioned for the purpose of securing the border with Mexico. In November, a federal judge ruled that Texas hadn't provided enough evidence in its request for a preliminary injunction that the federal government broke the law in removing the razor wire, but was critical of the Biden administration's execution of immigration policies. The immigration system at the heart of it all, dysfunctional and flawed as it is, would work if properly implemented. Instead, the status quo is a harmful mixture of political rancor, ego, and economic and geopolitical realities that serves no one, Judge Alia Moses wrote in the order. So destructive is its nature that the nation cannot help but be transfixed by, but simultaneously unable to correct, the present condition. What follows here is but another chapter in this unfolding tragedy. The law may be on the side of the defendants and compel a resolution in their favor today, but it does not excuse their culpable and duplicitous conduct. The decision was immediately appealed by Texas Governor Greg Abbott. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals then ruled in the state's favor, saying the lower court legally erred with respect to sovereign immunity and said the wire could only be cut in the event of a medical emergency. In its appeal to the Supreme Court, the Biden administration argued that if accepted, the court's rationale would leave the United States at the mercy of states that could seek to enforce the federal government to conform the implementation of federal immigration law to varying state law regimes. Biden officials also said it would have serious underground consequences, like preventing federal agents from being able to access the area they are charged with patrolling and their ability to quickly respond to emergency situations. Balanced against the impairment of federal law enforcement and risk to human life, the Court of Appeals cited as Texas's harm only the price of wire and the cost of closing a gap created by Border Patrol agents, the administration said. The case is one of many ongoing disputes between the Biden administration and the state of Texas when it comes to the border with Mexico. CNN Cable News Network has also covered this story and tells us more. The U.S. Supreme Court is allowing U.S. Border Patrol agents to remove razor wire deployed by Texas's Republican Governor Greg Abbott's security initiative at the U.S.-Mexico border, while the state's legal challenges to the practice plays out in the courts of law. The Supreme Court Justice's order is a major victory for President Joe Biden in his ongoing dispute with Texas Governor Greg Abbott over border policy, which had become especially fraught in recent days after three migrants drowned in a section of the Rio Grande River that state officials have blocked agents' access to, prompting the Biden administration to further press for the High Court's intervention. A federal appeals court last month ordered the Border Patrol agents to stop removing razor wire along a small stretch of the Rio Grande River while court proceedings continue. And the Justice Department asked the justices earlier this month to step in on an emergency basis to wipe away that order, which they did on Monday, 22nd of January. Supreme Court Justices Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh said they would have denied the federal request. Steve Vladek, a professor at the University of Texas School of Law, said that while the order is a victory for the Biden administration, the delay in issuing it raises future questions. Whatever one thinks of current immigration policy, it ought not to be that controversial that states cannot prevent the federal government from enforcing federal law, lest we set the stage for Democratic-led states to similarly attempt to frustrate the enforcement of federal policies by Republican presidents, Professor Vladek said. That four Supreme Court justices would still have left the lower court injunction in place will be taken, rightly or wrongly, as a sign that some of those long-standing principles of constitutional federalism might be in a degree of flux. White House spokesman Angelo Fernandez told CNN that the White House was pleased the Supreme Court vacated the injunction that prevented frontline personnel from performing vital federal functions and interfered with their ability to address urgent humanitarian situations and enforce our laws. Andrew Mahalaris, a spokesman for Texas Governor Greg Abbott, said in a statement, "The absence of razor wire and other deterrent strategies encourages migrants to make unsafe and illegal crossings between ports of entry." He said, "Governor Greg Abbott will continue fighting to defend Texas's property and its constitutional authority to secure the border with Mexico."
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be looking at an interesting question. It's a historical question, and that is a question related to an event that happened to occur on this very day, which is the changing of the Qibla in Islam. Coincidentally, today also marks the demise of the famous Lady of Islam, Hazrat Zainab, Salamullah Alayha. And for this reason, here at The Key and IRIB English Radio, on behalf of The Key and IRIB English Radio, we would like to offer our esteemed listeners condolences on this very sad and solemn day. And the question we want to ask today is, what exactly transpired, what were the events that led up to the changing of the Qibla in Islam? As you know, Qibla is a word which refers to the direction in which one orients oneself at the time of prayer. As you know, right now, in Islam, if somebody wants to pray, perform the ritual prayer, then they turn towards the direction of Mecca and the direction of the Masjid al-Haram, the sacred mosque, and specifically the Kaaba. But this wasn't always this way. In the beginning of Islam, Muslims, they prayed in the direction of Bayt al-Muqaddas, Jerusalem, and Masjid al-Aqsa. Masjid al-Aqsa, as you know, is the mosque of, you know, in which there is a very big rock, and that rock has very important and very significant for the followers of all of the Abrahamic faiths. It says a lot of things occurred. A lot of important events are connected with it. Like, for example, they say that the Prophet Abraham, when he wanted to sacrifice his son Ismail, he was going to do it on that rock. Or, for example, they say that the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, when he went to Mi'raj, he ascended towards the heavens. He started his journey, his spiritual journey, his night journey, from that rock. A lot of different events are connected to that rock. It's a very sacred mosque. And the followers of the other Abrahamic faiths, like the Jews, they all pray in the direction of the Bayt al-Muqaddas, Masjid al-Aqsa. Right. So in the beginning of Islam, this Muslims were praying in that direction. And this had slowly become a source of, they had become a source of ridicule for Muslims. You know, meaning the followers of the other faiths, you know, they used to ridicule the Muslims and say that, you know, you pray in our direction. It was almost as if they wanted to say that, you know, you Muslims are, you know, subservient to us, you know, and, you know, are, you know, you don't have any independence, and you're not, your religion is an offshoot of ours, and these kind of things. And this had become a source of distress, not only for the Muslims in general, but also specifically for the Holy Prophet, who was very sad about this. And this has been mentioned in the Holy Quran and in the Surah Baqarah. And it, at this time, at one time, the Prophet, during this time of when all of this was going on, one time the Prophet and Muslims, they were praying in the direction of Bayt al-Muqaddas, when verses of the Holy Quran were revealed, ordering the Holy Prophet to change the direction of his Qibla and the direction in which he prayed, and turn towards the Kaaba and Masjid al-Haram, the sacred mosque, and Mecca. And, you know, this marked a change in, this is one of the very significant events within Islam, where Islam, it achieved a relative independence from the other Abrahamic faiths from this point of view. And this is what transpired and regarding this event, and, you know, why it's significant. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the historical events that led to the changing of the Qibla in Islam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.